Houston, radio for peace.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to another edition of Technology Bites here on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Wow, what a smooth intro.
Yeah, it was funny. We were in here and I'm like, wow, I'd worked out. I had my laptop already charged. You know, I called Peter. He got on the line. Everything's going well. I'm like, man, I'd tell Groovehouse, this is going to be like a professional. Oh, it's going to be like we're a professional show. And then about that time, I kind of like pitched the headphones onto the board. And something happened, and all of a sudden, all the like monitor sounds went away. I'm like,
everything
what's going on? I have no idea what button just got hit and what I need to press to get it back like it was. But that we recovered successfully, and so, yeah, nobody knew until I just admitted it.
Wow. So that's good that we have unnoticed defects in the show that we bring to your attention. So, because we didn't want you to think that we actually
exactly.
did it right.
Exactly.
That would be horrible.
I've got an admission, too. I misplaced Dwight.
You left
were him here a second ago.
Were you in charge of him again?
Oh, did he wander off again? Do we have to have one of those silver alerts?
It's me. call his phone. If it says it's me, then we know he's around here somewhere.
It's me. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, no, Dwight is...
maybe he should change that tone to, like, when somebody texts him, it says, "Hi, my name's Dwight. I'm lost."
Hello, my name is Dwight. If found, please return to.
Surely there's an app for that.
I don't know what Shirley would be making an app like that for. All right, so yeah, Dwight's prepping for his vacation, so good for him.
So he's not here because he's packing?
He apparently did nothing to get ready for his vacation tomorrow. Huh. So he chose tonight to do it.
But he did go to the Geek Gathering, so.
Which, by the way, was awesome. That was
Star Wars cupcakes.
Yeah.
That's all I gotta say.
That was just a really, really good. I mean, now I've tried to plan anniversary parties, and this one I said, you know, just a Geek Gathering, it's anniversary. Just tons of people showed up.
We had a lot of new people, and a lot of old faces too came through that I hadn't seen in, you know, years, some of them.
Yeah, there were some people that showed up that don't come at all to Geek Gatherings that are friends of mine, but they came out to support us for the anniversary, and just a lot of strange new faces and some very old faces. It was very nice. Had a very good time. And it was all us. And when I got to the Aperture, to the Coffee Grounds, the place formerly known as Coffee Grounds, there were no customers there. Absolutely nobody in there. The place was completely empty. And then it just filled up with us.
And we packed them in there for a little bit there. It was pretty crowded.
There were quite a few people.
It was riding high for a while.
We had overflow outside and in the driveway, in the drive-thru. So.
Yeah. So we had a very good time. And if you missed it, well, tough.
You missed it.
Peter even showed up.
Peter was there.
Peter came all the way down.
So did old school Dave Fretz.
Yep, Fretz. Yeah,
Fretz. He's been coming pretty regular. And I got to say, his photos are getting a lot better.
than that old, like, Apple Star Wars binocular camera that he had back in the day.
But he was responsible for much of the documentation of the early days of Technology Bites Gatherings. So glad to have those. I mean, that was back then. You didn't have to cover your face so much because you weren't going to come out all that clear either.
The camera did it for him.
640x480 is just not that sharp, is it?
Yeah. So anyway, good Geek Gathering. Had a great time. Thanks to everybody who came out and helped us celebrate and just hung out with us on Friday night.
Thanks to Cynthia for the cupcakes.
Yeah, Cynthia brought the Star Wars cupcakes. They're on the Facebook page. If you go to the Facebook page, but also a few on Flickr.
The Facebook page is technology. Was it?
It's Geek Radio. It's facebook.com/geekradio.
Yeah. Are there not many pictures of the night, or was just everyone having too good of a time to take pictures? Which is fine. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was having too much fun to really. I didn't really go around and shoot pictures of people. I was having too good a
time.
That's
a sign of a good party, though. I mean, I don't think any of the normal photography people kind of, you know, stepped out of the party to go.
There's a few that have shown up on the event page. There's a few photos that have shown up from R. Clayton McKee and Dave Fretz posted a few, but nothing that really shows how crowded it was or anything. So you'll just have to take our word for it. But it was crowded. All right. So we're glad you tuned in. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. That is our official website. And has all the information you need to know about the show. You can also hang out with us IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bites, or you can just go to the website at geekradio.com and click on the IRC link and join us that way. We have a nice little Java client that will let you participate in the IRC there. And you can use the contact form on the website if you want to send us a question via email or via the internets. We may or may not be able to answer those on the air, but if you didn't want to call in and you just want to, you know, pose a question to be dealt with later, you can use the contact form there. Did you get my email, Barrett, about the thing that you need to include in the news?
I didn't. Actually, we based a lot of that last week.
I know.
On that. We can do it again, but this Barrett time was so watertight that there was no place to insert it. I was just planning on talking about it, which we could do now if we want
to. We can talk about it. We'll talk about it after the top of the hour. After you do the Barrett time, we can talk about the thing at the Museum of Fine Arts, which we got contacted about. We'll just kind of have it as an addendum or a footnote to the Barrett Times. All right. So what we're going to do now is go to San Antonio for the Technology Bites Info Shot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, first up, we've got... this one's a future thing. You know, we cover those, but this one's pretty cool. The Karlsruhe Institute of Technology kit. Yeah, like Knight Rider, right? Oh, no, that had two T's. Just deflated the size of one bit when you're storing it down to a single nanometer, the length of an organic molecule. That's small. The international research team managed it by first embedding a magnetized iron atom into a molecule made up of 51 atoms. then taking advantage of so-called memristive and spintronic properties. Those sound like, that sounds like made-up words, don't they? You know, yes, I use the memristor and spintronic, or else they're bands. Maybe that's the deal. By applying a current, so memristive and spintronic properties are the words of the day. By applying a current, they flip the atom's magnetic charge, altering the resistance of the molecule as well, which they subsequently measured, which is storing a bit. Compared to a typical magnetic drive, which needs a staggering 3 million atoms per bit, so this was 52 atoms instead of 3 million, a device made this way could theoretically store 50,000 times as much data in the same space. And it would be an all-electric drive to boot, so it would be kind of that's solid state. If the research ever pans out, you know, of course, they've just only done one bit, so it's going to take a little while before they do the other ones. A terabyte magnetic drive could turn into a 50 petabyte solid-state unit, hopefully ready in time for all those 4K home movies you'll need to store one day soon. You know, like your post-Blu-ray copy of The Hobbit. Once it comes out. So that was most wild. It'll be interesting to know if it's out, if this device, whenever it comes out, will be on a Surface tablet. You know, Microsoft surprised everybody when it unveiled two of its own branded Surface tablets this month. Since then, it's become quite clear that Microsoft is investing an awful lot of time and money into the project and is not playing around. Now it's been found, it's been told how well Microsoft expects Surface to do. According to Mary Jo Foley, Microsoft told attendees at Worldwide Partner Keynote in Toronto that the company expects to sell several million Surface units in the next year. I actually thought I heard Ballmer say a few millions with an S, Foley wrote on her All About Microsoft blog. The fact Microsoft is so ambitious is no surprise. After all, the company took a pretty big risk with its hardware partners by developing its own device. Since the company unveiled the Surface, many have been asking if Microsoft has lost faith in its partners. Another theory is that it was trying to give them an incentive to get to work on better devices of their own. And now that the company's taken this step with tablets, there's a question as to whether they'll make the same move with Windows Phone. Steve Ballmer said the company is concentrating on Surface for now, but did not rule out the possibility of a Microsoft-branded Windows Phone. Foley believes these lofty ambitions tell us that Microsoft is firmly in the hardware business and doesn't plan to go anywhere anytime soon. Of course, the company is no stranger to hardware. They've been manufacturing, you know, the Xbox, a lot of mice and keyboards, and at one point the Zune. Still, it'll be interesting to see how they do with tablets. And, you know, if things are going well with the Surface, they may build a phone, too. I just further on, there was some other stuff from Ballmer this week where he was talking about how they were not going to let Apple be in any area uncontested, which given that, you know, remember, Microsoft dominated a lot of this stuff and had a real presence in things like the phone business and all that before Apple got in. And so far, I think that it's safe to say that Ballmer has a lot to prove if he's going to show that Microsoft can come into something that Apple's already doing and make a sizable dent. You know, their enterprise cred has been dropping. The iPad is becoming the kind of bring-your-own-device of choice. And so Surface better rock or justify the cost, or Microsoft is going to look very foolish. So Ballmer's really got his rear on the line, I think, with this one. And, you know, his previous predictions were not did not work out well for his accuracy. I remember what the iPhone was going to be a failure and nobody would want an iPad. So we'll see if his forecasting has improved at all in the next year or so. There's an anniversary. Hopefully I'm not stepping on Barrett time with this one, but in 1962, so 50 years and one day ago, NASA launched the first Telstar satellite. Those of you who are old enough probably remember the Telstar stuff where, I don't know, nowadays there's so many satellites involved in this stuff that people don't know the names of them like they used to. The spherical satellite, which kind of looks like all of the Death Star, was the first to relay television and telephone signals through space. 2 days after they launched it, it transmitted a television signal across the Atlantic from Andover Earth Station in Maine to a telecom center in Brittany, France. The first images from the United States were of President John F. Kennedy, and the first beamed over from France were of singer Yves Montand, along with clips of sporting events. This was Telstar 1 was also responsible for the first telephone calls, some 400 of them sent through space. They put it in an eccentric low Earth orbit, and so it never was actually useful for satellite television, telephone communication like today. Each orbit lasted just 2.5 hours, and the satellite could relay transatlantic signals for barely 20 of those minutes. It also operated for about a year and a half. The thing is, it proved what it was doing. Its onboard electronics failed in November 1963, but that short mission was enough to change the world forever. So now we have satellite communication all over the place. You can get a tiny dish on your roof, can pull in thousands of channels and all that kind of stuff. And none of that would have been possible without Telstar 1. Now on to more earthly things. Here's one where Apple has been ahead of the curve for a long time. And it's just interesting to see it show up as far as what the study is, because it's an interesting change. Analyst, let's see, IHS, according to them, all-in-one PCs are going to drive the growth in the desktop sector this year and in years to come. The information analysis of the industry finds that all-in-one PC sales are growing quickly, while the traditional desktop sales appear to have stagnated. They claim that all-in-one units may end up saving the desktop industry from being driven into obsolescence by competing devices. I guess that means laptops and pads. According to their numbers, all-in-one PCs will ship 16.4 million units this year, while traditional desktops will ship 132 million units. While the traditional desktop shipments still dwarf all-in-ones, that 132 million figures represents only a 0.2% increase over the previous year, where all-in-ones are up 20%. They estimate that all-in-one computers will hit 25 million units by 2016, which is a pretty big growth. The analysis points out that Apple leads the pack among all-in-one PC manufacturers. You know, the iMac line of desktops accounts for 28% of the market, but everybody, Lenovo, Dell, HP, and Sony, all are present in it. So, I think that maybe it's partly a measure of the fact that as the electronics get smaller and faster, there's not a reason for your desktop computer to be very much larger than a monitor, frankly, like an iMac is, unless you just really need some serious hardware, some serious horsepower. There's not really a reason to go to a big separate box. I guess for cheapness, for it costing less, but just an interesting trend to see. Although the headline kind of, the growth outpaces traditional desktops, but they're still selling a ton of them. They're still selling a whole lot more than it doesn't look like there's a point where all-in-ones will exceed traditional type desktops. It's just that's more and more people are going to it. So just an interesting trend. I haven't seen a lot of workplaces that have gone over to it yet. I think a lot more people from home are buying all-in-ones. And now a phone rumor. It's a 4-to-5-inch phone. Bloomberg reported that last week that this phone was in development, and the Wall Street Journal now is going one step further. Oh, this isn't an Apple rumor, just in case you thought it was. No, this one is an Amazon rumor. Yeah, it isn't even a Microsoft phone rumor. Wall Street Journal is going one step further, suggesting that Amazon is testing a handset and even getting ready to go into production. According to the infamous unnamed sources, the journal explains the device screen is between 4 and 5 inches on the diagonal. It also suggests the device could go into production late this year or early next. Of course, you know, whether the rumors are accurate, we'll see. It's incredibly difficult to know either way because there's no real detail about, for instance, what kind of software would they use. I mean, it could, I would presume that it would be something like Android, that, you know, similar to the Kindle Fire. Obviously, they have some experience with that. So, nice part is, since the Amazon rumor mill is really going now, you know, between Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal, there are probably going to be some more details. If there's anything to this, more details will come out soon, so we can keep an eye on that one. And no, there are no new Apple phone rumors, because I don't think anybody's come up with anything. There wasn't, like, I guess in this week there was the iPad mini rumors, where somebody had what they claimed was like an engineering type mock-up, and several places showed showed pictures that showed the relative size based on the screen of the iPad mini to a current iPad and a Kindle, some of those. And I guess, well, the last thing that you know, just to give you your at least little taste of Apple rumors, Daring Fireball had some interesting work. You know, when you think about, okay, if they're going to do a different size, then one of the issues might be having enough. You know, how does that work with the operating system? Do you have to do new stuff? Kind of like when the Retina type display came out. You know, they had to do new things to make the images look right. You know, to have stuff not look crappy on the new screen. Well, interestingly enough, with the size, the almost 8-inch mini iPad would fit, would use the existing operating system just fine because of the way that it works between the phone and the iPad. Since it's 1024 by 768, it's the same number of pixels as the current as the iPad, the previous, not the new iPad, the iPad 2. It's basically the same screen, just scaled down, so the pixels are closer together, but it's a thing. And Daring Fireball did some good work on looking at the area things are not developed. You may not have thought about it, but they have to define the area around a link or something you push based on sort of pixels to make sure that it's a size that, you know, that your or my fat fingers can touch and actually trigger, you know, the push, you know, trigger a button push or trigger a click. And the if you scale it down for the 1024 by 768, it falls right in between what you get for an iPhone and what you get for a full-size iPad. So there's not really any software changes other than to things that measure, you know, specific lengths. Like if you had a on-screen ruler, obviously you can't just scale it. You know, you can't have the smaller screen and have it show the same length. So there's certainly not a lot of obstacles as far as, you know, like having to rework the operating system or have any kind of big update for it. So, you know, take that for what it is. I mean, Apple's going to decide if they're doing it or not. And at least the current thing is there's no, it does tell you that there's not going to be any hint, like some kind of update from of the operating system that's really necessary for them to ready to announce. So that's one place that you won't see, I guess you won't see rumors on. And finally, you know, I mentioned the Retina display. There's the one on the laptop. You know, maybe you don't want to do that, but you want to spend a ton of money on a display that does something really interesting, you know, so you can, I don't know, you can make your friend who's got the Retina display MacBook Pro jealous, or you could buy this and hook it up to it and have both. Wacom has announced an updated version of its largest interactive pen display. This is a touchpad, you know, with the stylus thing. The Cinti 24HD Touch that, as the name implies, expands its touch functionality beyond just simple finger taps. Like your smartphone, you can now perform multi-finger gestures for panning, zooming, and rotating your artistic creations. The 24HD Touch also boasts a display capable of reproducing about 97% of the Adobe RGB gamut, color profile often preferred by photographers. So that means that while doing color corrections and post-processing, you'll be able to see a better representation of what the shot will look like when you print it. Of course, this kind of capability doesn't come cheap. The Cintiq line of interactive displays has always been pricey, but the 24HD will sell for $3,700 when it ships in August. Obviously, this is targeted at professionals who make a living from this kind of pixel pushing. But yeah, now you've got, finally, you have the stand to one side of it monitor to go with your the stand to one side of it monitor to go with your $3,700 MacBook Pro Retina display device. Then you can have this next to it for your kind of touch print, touch and retouch. Screen to impress the heck out of your friends, or to just be something that someone can steal with like a large shopping bag where they can steal $8,000 worth of your gear. And that's the news.
All right.
So are you going to get one of those, Jay, a Cintiq 24HD? That story.
I heard you. I've been debating on whether or not I want to get a new desktop or a new laptop. And if I was to go with something like a Mac Mini or something, then I could get a nice big fat display for it. But I don't know. I have not touched my desktop very much here lately, but I did use it on Sunday and Monday and remembered that I really do like to have a giant display in front of me with a full-size keyboard.
Now that you're playing games, too, or game. You know, there's the possibility you got a new desktop, you could actually put a decent video card in there.
Why would I do that? I've got an Xbox on a giant 50-inch flat-screen TV. Why would
more control, more in-depth games, maybe? I don't know.
I like being on the couch. It makes me feel like less of a recluse.
I'm sold. I realize. Yeah, I realize my audience.
Yeah, you know, besides, Dooley the parrot doesn't, you know, he likes hanging out with me when we play the games. He gets all excited and stuff.
Is he starting to make noises from the game?
He makes some noises that seem to be in response to the game, but not of the game.
Okay, not yet, at least.
Not, you know, like when he has a little weird sound he makes when I'm pulling the bow, you know, the string back on the bow and notching that. And he keys in on the weirdest things. But yeah.
So your copy of Brave, I guess after you saw the movie, you had to have the game.
I haven't seen the movie yet. Yeah, it's not available. Is there a game?
Of course, there's a game.
They would stoop to such marketing gimmicks?
This is Disney. They, of course, have like 14 layers of marketing and other stuff that I'm sure they're pushing on this.
It does look like it'll be a. It's a Pixar, isn't it?
Yeah, Pixar. It's a good movie.
Have you seen it?
Yes. Well, I took my daughters to see it.
I saw it too. I didn't take Pete's daughters.
Did you take a woman with you?
Yes.
Okay. It's kind of like the sensitive. It's kind of like the chick movie of animated films, right?
It was good though.
I believe it's good. I like everything Pixar has done. So you know, but I probably won't see it in theaters. It's not 3D, is it?
You can see it in 3D. I mean, obviously, when you do it where it's computer rendered, the doing it to be 3D is probably a lot simpler than doing a regular filmed movie, you know, where you have to decide, are you going to film it in 3D or are you going to post-process it or whatever with the Pixar
type. They just use the 3D plug-in for the...
I did see How to Tame Your Dragon in 3D.
Was that any good in 3D?
It was actually nice in 3D because... Yeah, they're making it from a computer, so 3D's pretty good. It's much better than any of the... I don't like 3D movies. I only watch them because I'm with people who are with kids, and the kids want to see 3D, so we go see 3D. And so the only, like, maybe three or four I've seen were not very good, except How to Tame Your Dragon was pretty nice.
I watched
in 3D.
Hugo in 3D on my 3D television, and that was pretty good. I regret not watching Tintin. I may have to go back and watch it. I watched Tintin in 2D, which is fantastic, by the way. It's great animation. They use... It really is kind of the Indiana Jones of animated films. The way that the camera, so you know, air quotes, camera angles in the pans that they do are very, you can't do them in an action film for real, but they give you that whole action film feel, like just like a camera on a wire type of thing. And it's a great, great piece of animation. Loved it. All right. So 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We have zero calls in the queue, and we'd like to hear from you at 7. We should have been giving out that number while we were talking about Pixar, but that's fine. No big deal. 713-526-5738. So Dwight thinks that he might switch to Android if you read his latest column.
Is it due to the new phone he's carrying? Yeah. It's pretty nice.
I saw the tweet, but I didn't read the article. So I just saw, I said, I might change, this might be my next phone or not. And so I didn't read the review, so I wasn't really sure what the end point was.
I wish it came in black.
Instead of the little blue thing?
It comes in blue and white.
Hmm. I think Dwight just likes to change it up. Like, he likes to have
like
large shifts. A little bit. I mean, you know, Windows to Apple.
Maybe.
That's kind of controversial. And then, you know, going from, like, Apple to Android, that's kind of, you know, it's shaking it up. It's dramatic.
I wonder if, you know, I mean, that Galaxy does look really good.
It's super powerful and really, really lightweight for what it is, for the size that it is.
I mean, is it going, do you think that whatever the, Pete may be better to answer this. I mean, do we think it, the iPhone 5 is going to kind of come out and be under, you know, kind of underwhelming compared to some of the Android offerings that are coming out right now? Seems like there's some pretty good.
Based on the pattern, though, Apple usually they come out with the new thing, and then they have one that's an evolutionary step, and then everybody gets all torqued about that. I don't know. They didn't change things very much for this, and then they come out with the next one, and it usually blows people away. I mean, think about the iPhone 4. After the 3GS, and then so I think that Apple is on track to the next one should be pretty impressive, whatever they do with it. I mean, I would think that it might be time for an LTE iPhone and the bigger screen and some of those things. So there's plenty of things rumored for it that would make it a pretty serious update.
I can see where Dwight might be coveting the Android because at least they're here now. They're you could actually put one in your hand and you have this kind of wait till October, maybe September kind of thing going on with the Apple. All right. Looks like we got some calls in the queue.
Yes, we do.
All right. So Groovehouse is managing the queue and he's going to hand these off to us piecemeal.
Piecemeal.
Chainmail.
Piecemeal.
All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up first?
All right, up first on the show, we're going to take John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I got a Windows Vista, and the problem I'm having is it just started about 4 or 5 days ago. There's this little thing that comes up in the center of the screen. It's got like a horn to the far left of it. It's got the word volume, a red line, and 100 at the end of the red line. And it comes up during movies, just when I'm, you know, working on doing writing a letter or something like that. And right now it's not coming up. I don't know why. But down at the bottom of the screen, there's this little horn. And if I right-click on that, a little thing comes up that says Sound Manager, Audio Devices, System Sound Events, Windows Media Player, Volume Control.
Right, that's your volume control. And in Vista, it breaks it down into what program you want to actually manage the volume for, so you get multiple options in that window.
Yeah, so how do I get that little thing to stop coming up on the screen?
I don't know why it's coming up on the screen. That part's got me a little baffled. So you're saying that randomly,
yeah,
it'll pop up in the middle of your screen and show you the volume going for, what does it say on there?
It just says the word volume. It's a square window. It's rectangular, actually. It comes up in the center of the screen. I can't right or left click on that little window, but it's got a little horn to the left, the word volume, then a full red line, then number 100 after that.
Is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
Now, I know some of the smart keyboards have volume control built into the keyboard. So if you press the volume control button on your keyboard, it can cause something to pop up on your screen. What are you seeing, Ben?
I've got a question. Do you have the Media Center pack installed on your Vista box?
Media Center?
It probably is Media Center if you bought it.
Okay.
But do you look? Are you in front of the computer now?
Yeah, I am. I'm on it.
Now you look at your keys. Do you see a horn icon on any of your keys?
I'm looking.
It might be a function key. I don't have a Windows keyboard in front of me right now.
Yeah.
But
I don't see anything like that.
Because I know that there are on multimedia key. Who makes the computer?
Oh, that's.
Is it Compaq or HP or Dell or Toshiba?
No, it's E-Machines.
E-Machine. All right. My guess is that it's something you're inadvertently hitting on your keyboard that's triggering the volume control to show up on your screen. And I would, at least on the Mac, like if I, I know on the Mac, if I hit the function key and the volume key, or the, you know, it'll bring up a thing on my computer that shows me the volume.
Right. Well, it started when I was writing a letter. That's when it started happening.
Is this an HP machine?
No, he says E-machine.
It's an E-machine.
Oh, an E-machine, sorry.
Cheapo.
He's hitting the, it's the on-screen volume display in Vista is what's popping up.
Okay,
I just don't know why it's popping up.
And now I unplugged and I plugged back in my speakers, and now I'm not getting any volume at all. I got a movie in it right now, and I'm not getting any volume at all. And that little window's not coming up now either.
Okay. Is it... well... Have you checked, gone back down to that speaker icon to make sure that you have everything turned up?
What do I go to for that, sound manager?
Yeah.
Okay, and I just single-click on that?
Probably. I don't have Vista in front of me, but there's...
Okay, that'll come up in the back of the movie. Okay, what it says, main volume, left, right, I just do it all the way to the right?
Well, that left, right is like stereo left and right, right?
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so if you put it all the way to the left, everything comes out of the left speaker. If you put it all the way to the right, everything comes out of the right speaker.
Okay, I got that on the center. I set that on the center
a while
ago.
Also want to make sure that the volume is turned up, that you haven't inadvertently muted anything while you're doing that.
No, I didn't mute. I did mute it, but I took it off of that.
Okay. But you're saying
I was just playing around with
now.
Stuff.
What program are you watching the movie in?
Windows Media Player.
Make sure the volume on that program is turned up as well.
Okay, I don't know how to do that.
Well, you look at the program. There'll be a picture of a speaker probably in there, and that you can click on that to adjust the volume.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what's up with this thing.
You didn't install any new software packages right about the time this started happening, did you?
No, I didn't. I don't even have internet access, so it couldn't be a
No, it's not
virus
a virus
either.
Or anything like that. You've inadvertently played around with the volume controls, and you need to figure it out. You need to be able to pull those back up and look at your settings, because as you mentioned earlier, when you click on that horn icon, as you call it, it's a speaker, by the way.
Yeah.
If you click on that, it shows you the different things that you can control the volume on.
Right.
One of them might be Media Center.
Right, okay.
Are you seeing that, what I'm talking about?
Okay, let me go back and do that and click on that little horn and see if I get a Media
Center. Let's just call it a speaker, since it's a speaker.
Yeah, it says Windows Media Player.
And is the volume on that turned all the way up or down? Or
I'm fixing to find out. This is weird. It just says unknown DVD. It pops up unknown DVD library on top.
Do you have a DVD in your DVD player?
Yeah, I got The Passion of Christ in there.
Right. Okay, so you need to check the volume on it. Don't worry about what it's called or anything.
Where would it say the volume?
Well, it's going to be a slider switch, like a...
Oh, right here.
Yeah.
On the bottom, the volume. Yeah, that's all the way up.
Okay, and you said you unplugged and replugged the speakers in?
Yeah, right.
Why'd you do that?
I just thought maybe that would correct it somehow.
Check to make sure you plugged it in properly and make sure that you still have power to the speakers and make sure that you hit the volume, that the volume on the speakers is turned up. But troubleshooting a sound issue over the phone can be kind of troubling or problematic. So you're going to have to dink around with it and see if you can figure it out. You also might just try rebooting it. But if you unplug the speakers and you replug them in, you want to make sure that you have them plugged into the right socket, because if you accidentally plugged it into your microphone jack, that could be a problem. It sounds to me like you're struggling with some pretty basic sound settings, so you'll just need to, you'll have to play around with it. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Yes. Who do we have up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to talk to J2.
J2.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, nothing much. Just want to say appreciate you guys' show. I've been listening for a while, and you guys give me a lot of insight about technology, so good job to you guys.
Well, thanks.
Awesome. Well, my question is I had my Yahoo email account going over to my Android phone, and it was working fine. And then since the new update came out for the Android phone, my phone can't connect to my emails anymore, and I was wondering if you had any insight about that.
What happens when you try to connect your email? Are you
getting
an error?
Well, it keeps saying that, you know, is there a connection error with Yahoo. I mean, my password and everything is fine. It just can't connect over to it. And I don't know if I accidentally pressed a tab that wasn't right or something like that or whatever. And with that, I wanted to know, what exactly is POP?
POP3?
Yeah, what is that?
There are a couple different ways that you can get mail over the internet, and one of the older protocols is called Post Office Protocol, and that's POP, and is version 3. So what that does is it goes out and it gets an index, like a list of all the different messages that your email server has, and then it gets the message IDs and it can request, you know, downloading one by one. IMAP is your other choice, and that was able to actually let you see into folders, and you can have a lot more control with IMAP. That's probably what you want. Okay. They may have changed some settings or some server settings. What I would do is if you go into your mail settings on Android and then actually go into the accounts and view the settings, make sure that you don't have any encryption set up. Make sure that it's not on. So if you're doing POP, I think it's like port 110. If it's IMAP, it's clicked, you know. Anyway, it should do the default ports. Try that. If that doesn't work, you can also try SSL. They may have actually added SSL to their servers right now, and I'm looking to see.
Well, what I'm thinking is that you might want to just go ahead and delete your Yahoo account, because nothing's going to happen to your Yahoo mail. It's all there. And then just re-add it.
Yeah, and that's what I did. And, like, since then, the password and everything is fine, but I still can't get the email to go over to my Android phone. So it was working fine like a month ago. Now it's not working at all.
Hmm. Where'd you get the server settings for Yahoo?
It was already on my phone. The Android phone has an
Okay,
email.
So you're using the Yahoo application then. You're not necessarily like putting in the Yahoo credentials into the native email application that comes on your Android phone.
The Android has a widget that says, you know, sync your email, set up. Just all you have to do is just tell which email address is your password.
That's
and
the native client, yeah. There is some, that's 2011. Now, do you use Yahoo because you have a Southwestern Bell account or something?
No, I have a Comcast account.
Why do you use Yahoo as opposed to, say, Gmail?
Just because I rarely use Gmail. I've always used Yahoo.
The problem with, I don't know much about Yahoo, and I haven't configured a Yahoo Mail account on an Android phone, but there may be something in the recent update that caused it. But I can't imagine that, I can't imagine that's the case.
Right. I mean, it's so simple. I was just like, why would that mess up?
They did, and this isn't too recently. This is February of 2011. They did. It looks like they're enforcing SSL on some of their servers. Do you know if you're going to imap.mail.yahoo.com?
Do you know
no,
what?
I'm not.
You're not.
No.
So the question also is whether or not, because we're talking about Yahoo for Southwestern Bell is different than the free Yahoo Mail account. Now I know So I know that if you have an account with Southwestern Bell, you get a Yahoo email account, and it's a little bit more robust for doing things like IMAP or, you know, configuring a mail client for. But the free Yahoo Mail,
That's the one I have.
May not be as fully... although I think it should work with the Android, but I don't think you have as many options. I don't know if there's an SSL login, but or not for the free version of Yahoo. But
no, it's very simple.
Yeah.
The only thing, I mean, that I can maybe think of is the update that pushed out changed the maybe like the default settings for the mail account so that it uses SSL now and it didn't before or something, so that, that they can't connect. So whatever the settings used to be are a little bit different now after the upgrade, and so it's not making a successful connection.
Okay.
Here's the last thing. Why don't you try going to mobile.yahoo.com/mail/android and just using
there. I tried that, but the reviews say they're horrible. I mean, there's a lot of bugs with that app, so I chose not to use that.
Yeah, I mean, that would get you to your mail at least right away, and you might want to think about shopping around. I mean, if you're carrying Android, the way that, I mean, it's a Google phone, pretty much. It's a Google operating system. Having a Gmail account will open up worlds of being able to synchronize that you never thought possible. It's kind of scary how much they do, but it's also really cool how everything just works together. So you might, seriously, if you're hardcore Android, maybe pick up a Gmail account.
Okay. I have another quick question about the cell phone service. Me and my wife are considering going over to Sprint, and we just want to know as far as like the data packages that come with Verizon and Sprint. Someone told me that Sprint's data plan drops if you go out of certain zones, so it's not exactly as limited as it sounds in the contract.
I saw something about if you're roaming on Sprint, then you will lose some of your, you know, you may pay for overages on that, but I'm not sure exactly how that works. Groovehouse, you have a Sprint.
All I got to say is don't use that data when you're roaming. I barely get any roaming. No, you know, your phone will tell you. Your phone will tell you you're roaming.
When might you roam? I mean,
if you get out of
Sprint's coverage, you'd have to
jump. If
you get
an elevator, I don't know. I mean, it never happens to me in Houston.
Now, I know that Sprint will throttle. Like, you definitely probably have to pay if you go way over your bandwidth. But I know that you're guaranteed a certain speed up to a certain amount. And then once you hit that bandwidth, you're throttled back down. You're relegated back down to kind of 3G kind of speeds.
Okay.
Sure with Sprint. And then I've got Verizon. So with Verizon, you actually have to pay, like, it's $30 or $40 more a month for, you know, a 5 gig or a 10 gig chunk of data. I might be off the numbers here. I'm not super happy with them right now. And then on top of that, if you want to be able to tether, that's another $10 or $15 a month.
So they get you quite a bit to add data.
It's another $50 or $60 a month, at least with Verizon. So.
See, I'm kind of grandfathered in on the old contract where it was unlimited. So if I change anything, I go back to the different way they split it up. Mm-hmm. So that's what's kind of like making me want to stay with Verizon. But my wife's saying, like, you know, Sprint is way cheaper and for the both of us, and we can go through it. But I'm still worried about the data plan part.
And that's the thing. I would just go online and just kind of see what plans they have. Maybe even just, you know, Google Doc it out or spread. You see, you could do Google Docs if you had the Gmail account, or, you know, spreadsheet it out and just kind of see what the price would be, the price difference would be, and kind of make a plan based on that.
And then also look at your previous three or four phone bills and see how much data you use, because if you normally only use 400 or 600 meg of data in a month, then it really doesn't matter if they cap you or slow you down at 2 gig because you've never even gotten close to it.
Right. Okay, great, guys. Hey, well, you answered my questions, and thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Thanks. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, how are we doing on time? We're about 12 minutes to the top of the hour. Don't let us forget to do our little station break. All right, Groovehouse.
This is the professional show. So.
It is a professional show, so you won't blow it. Or if you do blow it, you'll tell everyone about it.
Yeah, they'll know. I'll keep me honest.
713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to take Tim.
Tim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Well, hey, Jay. I have just a very couple of quick comments, and quite frankly, I mean, I'm an ungeek, and I am unknowledgeable about the computer stuff. My wife does that all for me. I do Craigslist every now and then. She's taught me how to do email. So I actually have no questions, but I heard your earlier comments about you and, I believe, your son
doing video games.
That's his pet.
My parrot.
It's his parrot.
My bird.
His pet bird.
Your what?
My African gray parrot.
Who's, well,
he doesn't actually play games. Parrot. He just provides.
Out loud. I am so sorry.
He just provides.
A bit of it.
That's all right. Dilly the parrot provides his birdly commentary during anything electronic going on in my house.
Okay, I'm an old guy. I was going to talk to you about the effects of all this stuff on youngsters.
And parrots.
I've got a 9-year-old girl who is tied in to the computer so hard, but I've got a 41-year-old daughter who's, like I said, I'm an old guy. And it's like, it is night and day different. So, anyway, that was about it. And besides that, back in the 80s, you made fun of me when I played a song in front of you.
When you played a song in front of me in the 80s.
On KPFT. They did a fully live day in the 80s. It was the only, or at least the first, completely live day where everybody came in. And, you know, I had, like, my hankers up in my late 20s or 30s. And I came in and I sang a couple of songs, and you made fun of me. And I remembered that from... now, and I don't know why you did that.
Well, I can't even remember anybody coming in and playing music live and in front of me on the air.
I played Cabin Boy, and you made comments about Cabin Boy.
Cabin Boy, like from the movie?
No, a song I wrote.
A song you wrote?
Yeah. And anyway, that's not the issue.
I have no idea
why you were there. You were there as someone who was important, and I guess I just wanted you to know that I've been listening to you ever since.
I think that Jay had a son, though, so there could be another
factual mistake. There could have been another misunderstanding there. You sure it wasn't my parrot making fun of you?
No.
I will say this, Tim.
However, I took no offense.
I'm glad, because I'm not sure that actually happened, but I'm first to admit that I'm kind of a jerk, but...
Well, no, sir.
But you're, I don't think I would have made fun.
You're very demonstrative in your attitude and demonstrative in what you say.
All right, Tim. Well, if I offended you, I apologize.
Oh, no.
But
this was not about
I'm
offense.
Sure if I said something, it probably really sucked.
Yeah, it did at the moment.
Demonstrative.
For me, though, and beyond that, make sure that the kids get outdoors.
Get out. Don't play their songs in front of
that, me. And let your parents.
All right. Thanks for your call, Tim.
All right. Bye.
I think cats are more dangerous than video games to parrots. I think you should stay indoors and, you know,
I'm really
close to the controller.
I'm trying to remember. Like, I will tell you this. One thing I do know is that my involvement in this radio station tends to only be what I do on the air, with little else. So I can't even imagine a situation where I'd have been hanging out here where there was some kind of everybody be on the air day. It doesn't even ring a bell, but I will tell you, there are large blocks from the 80s that are missing from my mind. So it's, who knows?
Well, making fun of people over tech is kind of, you know, that's a requirement of being geeky in some circles, but I would say that you've got a healthy respect for music. I can't envision you making fun of anyone.
We should ask him to sing the song to see if he can jog your memory.
Cabin Boy reprise, yeah.
Cabin Boy.
It might have brought back your inner jerk.
Like it ever left. All right, Grewhouse,
yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next we're going to take Daryl.
Daryl, you're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right. I have a question about choosing a good email, or not just your email, but an internet account password, and something y'all discussed a lot over the years, and I've been meaning to go through and just kind of change all my passwords and my accounts for, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years, and never got around to it, and then a few weeks ago, two sites I have an account on were hacked, one of which y'all talked about, I think it was LinkedIn. And I just thought, I probably ought to go ahead and take the plunge. Now, what I was planning to do, and I just kind of wanted just to sanity check this, is, well, the thing I've been hearing is that you want to Been hearing some people say you want to go towards longer passwords because computers are just getting powerful enough now that even if you have a pretty complex password, if it's short, you know, they can just brute force guess it. So I've heard some suggestions of, like, it used to be, you know, take a phrase, take a letter out of each word in a phrase and use that. And now I hear a lot of people saying just go ahead and use the whole phrase. And that's what I'm leaning towards. And I'm just trying to kind of see if, is that an overkill? Is that a smart way to go? I don't know. What do y'all think?
No, that's sage advice. Use the whole phrase. And then even just to make it a little bit more difficult, throw like a special character in there, like an underscore or a dash somewhere. Even better, mix the case of it. Like use uppercase and lowercase letters. Make it where it's logical for you, but don't do the entire thing all under case, you know, all under, you know, lowercase, all running together.
The only thing is if it's a system that doesn't take more than a certain number of characters and you're using this long phrase, it's only going to recognize the first eight characters. I mean, some systems will do that. And so if it only recognizes the first eight, you know, and your phrase starts off with, like, that went, then your password on that system is that went, which actually isn't a very complex password at all.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully the systems, and hopefully it sounded like you said before, you're using different passwords for each of the different accounts, which you understand the importance of now, especially if you've had a password that's, you know, made its way out into the world without your permission.
Yeah, basically the idea is I'll have kind of a base password with, you know, add a few characters to it based on what account it is. And, yeah, I've already run into, I have at least one site that I think limits passwords to like 15 or, you know, it was some number of characters that was a lot shorter than what I was planning to use, which kind of irritated me, but.
Yeah, we'll do it. Like you said, I mean, just know, be cognizant of what sites those are, and then, you know, just have a shorter password for them. Then the other thing, too, is if you do get a lot of different passwords, you can have, you know, instead of writing it down and keeping it on a yellow pad somewhere, which you could do if you hit it somewhere in your home, there are a lot of, like, encrypted USB devices, or there are other places that will actually help you manage all those passwords and store them. I mean, I'm really basic. I just keep it in a text file on an iron key.
There's also patterns you can use so that the password is different for every site, but in a pattern, in a way that's related to the site, that you know what the change is going to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That sounds you're sane.
Chuck. Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know. I appreciate your help.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All right.
Bye. Bye. All right. Well, that's all the calls that we have in the queue. We got a couple of minutes.
Yeah,
before
1 minute.
Kojo from IRC told the caller to check out one password. So number one, and then password.
Okay. Yeah, we were talking about that last week too.
Yeah, I love it. I use that password for every site I sign up for.
One password.
One password.
I capitalize
the P.
Isn't
that how it works? You just sign up with them and then you use that password.
I substitute the one with an I.
I just capitalize the one.
I just use one. I don't have time to type passwords.
Security is for chumps. All right. Well, if you want to be on the show with us in the second hour of the program, you can dial 713-526-5738 and get in the queue. Groovehouse will be happy to screen your call and get you online and get you lined up for that. So you might want to take advantage. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. All right. Well, we need to take a short break here before the top of the hour. Do some station business. We'll be right back. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Teach our children.
Peace Camp Houston still has openings for K through 5th grade campers this summer. This day camp is non-religious and welcomes all children. Age-appropriate activities foster understanding of peace, justice, and environmental awareness. Details are at peacecamphouston.org. The first week will be 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., July 23rd through 27th, at the Cameron Retreat Center at Holcomb and Almeida. It's almost full, but a second week has been added for August 6th through 10th at the Mennonite Church on Wirt Road. The 2 weeks will be different, and campers may attend either or both. See peacecamphouston.org for details, photos, and comments from past camps, plus information on registration and fees. Scholarships are available. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards, but if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and, at the same time, take care of unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's really that simple to support the station you have come to rely on for music, news, and public affairs program. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You are tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. Again, thanks to everyone who came out last Friday for the July installment of the now award-winning Geek Gathering, commemorating 17 years of Technology Bites. Now, many of you showed up expecting a good time, but were instead made to choose between the light side and the dark side of the Force. For some, the choice was made for you. Don't worry, we won't let your choices color our impressions of you, mainly because I dropped the USB stick containing all of our surveillance data somewhere in the parking lot, along with my sunglasses. So, double party foul on that. If you have a penchant for computing's past, or if you're obsessed with the newest bright and shiny gear Apple has to offer, then you may want to clear your day Saturday, July 21st, for the Houston Area Apple Users Group semi-annual swap meet, or HOGS, ASLM for short, taking place at the Bel Air Civic Center at 7008 South Rice Boulevard. Hit www.haaug.org for details and directions. Now, I've got a question. Has anyone in the studio ever reached for their mobile phone because they could feel it vibrating, only to find that no one had called, or even worse, the phone wasn't where you were reaching?
I don't know if this is a real
yes.
You know, I, yes?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Groove?
Definitely.
I'm sorry, I was not
doing
listening.
Something else.
Yes. Sorry.
No, it's cool. I asked if you'd ever gone for your phone because you felt it ringing or vibrating.
Yes, the phantom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah. This phenomenon known as phantom vibration syndrome.
Yes.
Phantom ringing, ringxiety. Hypovibrochondria, or my personal favorite, faux alarm, which is a combination of the words faux, cell, and arm that sounds like a one-off of false alarm, may affect up to 70% of people whose cell phone use could be described as extremely heavy. I started delving into this after I felt my cell phone vibrate in my back pocket while I was actually holding it in my hand. I was holding my cell phone, not my backside. The theory as to why this happens is modeled after something known as phantom limb syndrome and the fact that many feel as though their mobile phones are an extension of their bodies. When those connections are severed, the brain makes adjustments that can have previously unexpected results. Originally thought to originate with the damaged nerve endings of amputees, phantom limb syndrome is now believed to be brought about by the overlaying of several extremely complex neural networks in the brain itself. In 2009, Lorimer Mosley and Peter Bruger carried out an experiment in which they encouraged 7 arm amputees to use visual imagery to contort their phantom limbs into impossible positions. 4 of the 7 subjects succeeded in performing the impossible movements with their phantom limbs. The experiment suggested that the subjects had modified the neural representations of their phantom limbs and then generated the motor commands needed to execute these impossible movements in the absence of any feedback from the body. The authors said that, in fact, this finding extends our understanding of the brain's plasticity because it is evidence that profound changes in the mental representation of the body can be induced purely by internal brain mechanisms, and the brain truly does change itself. It sounds a little like The Matrix. And I'm talking about the first one, not the 2 follow-ups, which were heavily soaked in weak sauce. Surely phantom vibration syndrome isn't caused by the continual doses of radiation we've been receiving from these devices over the last 20-some-odd years, right? On a lighter note, maybe we'll feature some phantom phone stories on our Halloween show coming up later this year, as the one about the bloody hook hanging from the server rack is getting a little stale. Anyway, some other potential phantom phenomena that have been yet to be studied by medical science. There's the phantom ocean. That's the phantom sound of the ocean you hear in large seashells that have been removed from the ocean. This effect does not happen when the shells are underwater, as they've been reunited with their aquatic appendage. It's also the clinical condition where you hear Billy Ocean songs in the back of your mind. Get out of my dreams. Yeah, get into my car. Phantom shifter syndrome, which occurs when you've been separated from your standard transmission automobile and inadvertently try to shift the knee of the passenger riding shotgun in the rental, which is not to be confused with phantom shift syndrome, caused by being separated from your full-size desktop keyboard while having to type on a netbook instead. There's the Phantom Menace. That's when you watch the actual Phantom Menace, but instead feel the movie that could have been had Lucas not gone down the road of Jar Jar Binks hijinks. Phantom of the Opera, I think that's self-explanatory. And I'm all out. Does anyone else have any?
Phantom braking phenomenon? When you're teaching your teenage child how to drive and you're in the passenger seat.
Yeah, that could be bad.
I thought you were going to say teaching your child to break dance. But those are real breaks.
No one else?
All the breaks.
Well, that's it for your Phantom Phenomenon 4-1, and that's that for Barrett Time. Did everyone hear the Phantom numbers? I only said 4 and not the 1-1.
Mm-hmm. I heard the last one.
I heard that.
You heard
I felt the vibration.
Don't worry if you only heard the 4. If, however, you're extremely familiar with the phrase 4-1-1, then you may have heard both ones. If you only heard a single one, then you probably have issues. Just kidding.
Okay, this was maybe related or maybe not. When you were talking about Hog and the Swap Mate, did you say hogasms?
That's the, if you do the hog and then the semi-annual swap meet, that's what you get. I didn't make that up. I'm just, you know, maybe
okay.
You shouldn't name it.
Okay, so that was, yeah, I was like, I'm not sure if I heard that right.
Oh, the things we heard. All right, make sure that gets posted to the website, but also we want to mention that we had a notification about the Museum of Fine Arts. Is it there?
Yeah, they're doing, so we mentioned it last time. This is the Steve Jobs interview that was done, I think, around 1985. This is, you know, kind of a dark period of his life once he had left Apple. And Bob Cringely, if that's how you say his last name, he does like a daily or semi-weekly blog right now, but he did an interview with him, and it was on VHS, and the tape was lost. So they found this, I think, just within the last year or so. They've converted it over into film, and it is making the rounds. So it was actually over at the River Oaks 3 a few months ago, so you missed that chance. But it was played last week, and it's still playing, I believe, this week, Thursday and Saturday, two shows at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston.
Check check their website for details.
Yeah, mfah.org. And it's the Brown Theater, I believe, is where it's showing.
Is this thing, is it being billed as the Lost Interview?
That is it.
Okay.
That is it.
Okay.
So I think they may have, you know, they may have done some narration. They may have kind of set it up in the movie. It's not just the raw videotape, but it's some, you know, some stuff that had been lost for a while, and it just kind of come to surface, you know, at a kind of an odd time in the arc of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. All lines are open, and we invite you to call in if you want to be in and on the second hour of our program tonight. 713-526-KPFT.
All tech talk.
All tech talk, tick tock.
All tech talk, tick tock.
So is anybody, it hasn't come out yet. The new Batman movie, I guess, is
July 20th.
And the Spider-Man movie?
It's out.
It's out.
It's out?
Yeah.
Anybody seen that?
But nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Waiting for Batman.
Not really. What about Walking Dead? Is that started up again, or when does that start?
Not yet.
I don't know when that starts, but I haven't heard anybody talking about it. So
Breaking Bad
Something's starting soon.
Breaking Bad.
Dexter, does that come back?
It's coming back. I haven't checked the release dates on that. That's HBO, so... It's a little out of my
I've region. Been watching a couple things on Netflix.
713-526-5738. What have you been watching?
A British comedy called Peep Show.
Oh, that's really good.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, there's like 6 years of it, and
yeah.
All really good. And then after you do that, the two guys that did that went on to do something, I think it was called like That Mitchell and Webb Look.
Okay.
Which is some sketch comedy with the same two people, and it's like that same kind of painful comedy. If you like the British Office... you will like Peep Show.
Yeah, it's really good. It took a show or two to get into it. But
yeah.
I'm like 6-7 episodes into the first season. And
who told me about Lilyhammer? Either of you?
I don't think...
I've seen that, but I haven't watched it yet.
I don't think...
I don't know.
I swear somebody told me about it.
Well,
found it on my own. It's great. It's a mob guy who goes into witness protection in
Dutch?
In Norway.
Norway.
Lilyhammer, Norway. And so he sets up shop there and opens a club and Oh, the hijinks that follow.
That ensue. The blonde-haired, blue-eyed hijinks. The other thing I've picked up watching is Workaholics. It's a show that's currently on Comedy Central, but they've got a couple of seasons on Netflix.
I'm familiar with it. They don't work nearly as much as I thought they would based on the title of the show.
They really don't, but you know what? That show is stupid funny.
Workaholics.
I seriously just thought my phone was vibrating.
No, I had my phone in my hand.
It happens to me fairly frequently.
Yeah, and I didn't know if I was just having a weird kind of spasm thing, but it's happened more than once where I usually carry my phone.
No, that happens to me actually a lot.
It's kind of weird.
And sometimes my phone is actually in my pocket, and sometimes it's not in my pocket.
Yeah. So I don't know. Again, that's where I've been, giving that part of my leg solid daily doses of radiation for who knows how many years.
Yeah.
That's
the
also in the back of my mind.
Trying to contact
but,
you. Fact or faked?
713-526-5738. All the lines are open. We can keep talking about phantom vibrations of ourselves. Which, I would point out that there is a certain class of person who is considerate enough to set their phone to vibrate. Because most people just leave it on. I mean, they never have phantom. You probably don't have a good pool of phantom vibration people.
Mine is always on vibrate unless I go home and actually set it down somewhere.
Right.
If I'm in public, it's not going to
ring. Oh, it does both?
It does both.
Yeah,
unless I'm somewhere and I want to turn it off,
Right.
Like right now, it's not even on vibrate because if it vibrates on the desk here, you'll hear it. So
why would you have it on both, though?
In case I don't hear it.
I like it on both because it makes if I'm in the middle of like listening to music
or
something's loud, then I can
room.
Still feel it that it's going off instead of
why
just
would you
hear
just have it vibrate and not have a sound? Then you would always know.
And sometimes I want to hear that ringtone, dude.
I paid good money for that.
The off chance you set it down somewhere and lose it, then the vibrating's not going to help you recover the phone.
How is everybody going to know how cool you are if they can't hear your cool ringtone?
That's right.
How clever you are.
Yeah, I guess, or how irritatingly clever you are.
That's why I turn mine up as loud as possible.
At least you don't have that. Do you sell that meow one where there was a person?
It's funny. I don't have that one. No, I flipped back about 3 or 4 weeks ago to Nyan Cat, so it's not the Nyan Cat again. But I do still have the Joust Pterodactyl. That's not mine.
Do you know what that is?
No.
It's the probe droid from The Empire Strikes Back when it comes out of the snow. that's the sound it makes.
Well, why don't you make the sound of somebody answering the phone?
Yeah.
All we've got right now are phantom rings.
All right, one call coming in, and one call coming in. All the rest of the lines are open if you want to come up out of the snow and give Groovehouse your ringtone. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. 713-526-KPFT. We will answer your computer questions. And without Dwight here to help fill in the gaps, we even more depend on your phone calls to help stretch the show along. Although I did see Dwight tweeting. Apparently he has time to tweet.
Not too busy to tweet.
He's
social online.
Yeah, he's carrying on his online social media empire, but,
Or to know that he had a show on Wednesday and, packed before.
Was his tweet about how bored he is and has nothing to do?
That would have been good, but no. All right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse is in the process of screening a call, but we do have open lines if you want to be on the air. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Now, keep in mind that when you dial in, and Groovehouse is screening your call to get you ready to be on the air, that you don't want to spend too much time chewing his ear off like this call is doing right now so that we can get you in the queue and get you on the air. Here comes another call, so Groovehouse will have to eventually get this person on hold and get them over to us.
Running commentary.
And I'm trying
technology
to like stretch.
Oh,
and,
no.
We've lost
our first call.
Oh, and they hung up. So, do we have one on hold?
We had one of the slot one.
Oh,
it was an interesting call, but it was commentary that I think he's supposed to relay.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Well, if he can get this on the holding for us, we can take a call cold here and go to live one. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. You're on the air.
Hi. Microsoft Office question.
Okay.
Excel. I want to open up two Excel workbooks without having to open up a second recurrence of Excel.
What version of Excel do you have?
Office 2010.
Well, you can just... What do you mean you don't want to open up a second occurrence of Excel? You want to have... I'm not following you.
Okay, you want to open up a worksheet on one screen, a dual screen.
Uh-huh.
So I go and I open up the worksheet, and then I want to open up another worksheet, but without those sheets piggybacking onto each other.
So you want to have one in one screen and one in the other?
Yeah.
Google search open Excel spreadsheet new, or, you know, dual screen Excel spreadsheets. I mean, there's a setting inside of Excel that'll tell it whether or not to open it up in a new instance or open up in the same instance. And you should be able to drag, you know, have open one up on the other. I'm not sure the terminology you're using, but if you do a Google search open Excel two monitors. Let's see what we find.
I was finding a lot of reg hacks, but I was looking for the setting you're talking about.
How to compare two Excel documents side-by-side monitor. Let's see what this website tells us. But because, you know, you're not the first person who's used Excel and wanted to do it in two monitors. If you're working almost the entire day in front of your computer, blah, 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 but some application, blah, blah, blah. Tools options, general tab, Excel 2007 is going to probably be more likely. I don't see one for 2010. If you click on the Office button and then Excel options and then Advanced, you enter general, check, ignore other applications. Nah, that's not what we want. There's a way to do it. I don't have Excel loaded on this computer right now. I'm not a big Excel. Is it also on Windows 7?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see if I can find it for you real quick. With this, let's see how to open it. So I don't know if you got the question mark. Give it a shot. Soon as you define two monitors as extended time, no problem. So what happens if you double click on one spreadsheet and then you double click on the other spreadsheet? Those don't come up as two separate Excel docs that you can move one side by side.
No, it kind of hides them. I forget what the terminology is called.
Stacks them.
Yeah.
I think it's, wish I had Excel, but open Excel new window. Let's see what we find with that one. Okay, how to open Excel spreadsheet in a new window. Are you finding anything?
No, although a lot of people are saying what you can do is you can actually just pin it. If you want to get two different Excels running, make sure Excel's pinned to the quick launch taskbar. So pin it there, and then I think if you right-click on it, you can then click on it again, it'll launch a new version, and then you can just move that over to the right, and then double-click the top thing to get it to blow up on the right-hand monitor, assuming it's popping up.
Yeah, that's an easy fix. I'll try that.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, bye.
All right. Groovehouse, we had to take that one cold because whoever was chatting you up, so did you have something you need to tell us?
No.
No?
It was a caller who had commented on phantom vibration. She said that the last time it happened, her phone wasn't on her person. It was actually in her handbag, and she felt it vibrating, and it was actually ringing in her purse. She thought she was...
So it was like metaphysically attached still.
Still.
Parakinesis.
There you go.
And then the operator broke in and told you that there was no one on the line.
Call is coming from in your pants.
Yeah. So, but we do have a few calls in the queue, and we do have room for more. So 713-526-5738 if you've got a question for us. Shall we take another call, Jay?
Sure.
Are you reading about Excel over there?
I was looking here. It says, like, if you, with Excel, if you... click Excel and run it, and then you click Excel again and run it from the start menu, and then you can open up your documents and spread it. There was also, so if you have two files in the same instance of Excel, you can use View, Window, Arrange All to tile your open workbook side by side within the Excel parent window. Mm-hmm. That won't let you stretch it over to two monitors, though. So you actually have to open up two instances of Excel, so... one
if she's comfortable, there is a hack. It comes in a file called open in new Excel instance.zip, and it's more or less, it's a script that you run. It's a registry hack, and it'll actually make the default behavior. It'll look and it'll see if there's one instance of Excel already running, and if there is, it'll launch that second instance in the second monitor.
Really?
But it's a registry hack. Yeah, I found it on expertsexchange.com. And again, if she's still listening or the stream later, it's open in new Excel instance.zip. Just put all those words in there, and I bet you can find it.
Do you have an Expert Exchange account?
I don't. I always think about it, but I just can't.
It annoys me that they hide it.
Yeah.
When you search, but when you go there, it's hidden, and so I don't want to get an account because it annoys me.
Although there's a way to use Google Cache to see what's there sometimes.
Sometimes,
yeah. Not always.
All
Which
right.
is weird because this isn't actually behind a paywall. This is just out there, so I don't know.
Sometimes it slips out in the open. I don't know what their deal is. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Jenny.
Jenny, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. My mom's 85 years old, and she wants a computer. Her eyesight is poor. It needs to have either... It's got to be something small that she can look at. She wants to do crossword puzzles. She wants to read books.
Why does it have to be small? If her eyesight's poor, doesn't she want something big?
Well, she needs something that the lettering can blow up on. It has to be lightweight.
Windows, well, so is she looking for, like, a laptop then?
Yeah, either a laptop or I don't know anything about that.
Does she want something that where she can, like, sit in a chair and then put something in her lap and use the machine
exactly.
there? Does she want to be able to go sit at a desk where she'll have a monitor and, like, a box that'll be there set up
exactly.
already?
Exactly. Well, actually, in her lap.
Well, the problem with the laptop that you were going to run into is that the real estate is much smaller. So, you know, if you try to blow stuff up too much on a little monitor, you're not going to get it all on the screen.
And it's going to be away from, you know, the field of vision, too. It's not going to be as good as her sitting, like, at a table or a desk and having something that's a little bit more in front of her. Windows,
she's mostly going to just be consuming content. You might consider the current iPads, because with the Retina display, it lets you enlarge the content fairly easily, and it is light, and you could even have something that you could put next to a chair that would hold the iPad up in front of her. She doesn't have to actually physically hold it up to look at it.
And it's probably easier to move move them around, like move around when it's...
Zoomed in. I'm trying to think of an 80-something-year-old woman. You know, there's going to be a challenge with the touch keyboard. And
actually,
I think it's easy.
Is there any kind of pad out there that actually has the old-fashioned pen that you can actually write on the screen?
You can buy pens.
You can't write on the screen.
You can buy pens for iPad.
But it won't let you hand write necessarily
There are some apps that can recognize. I mean, because it's like writing with your finger. Because there's some apps that'll let you handwrite notes with your finger. It's a touch capacitive
but
stylus.
But she's talking about being able to do crossword puzzles, so there's going to still be a keyboard input.
Yeah, that's still going to be. I mean, unless the crossword puzzle app lets you write. But no app's going to do that on a computer anything.
I got it, yeah.
But as far as using a stylus, you can buy styluses that work with the iPad. They're a special style of stylus.
Right, that allow you to do what you would do with your finger.
Right.
Basically, that's all it's going to do. Whatever the iPad allows you to do with your finger, you can do it with a stylus. They do make those styluses.
They actually have had a lot of examples of older people and younger children that find the iPad touch interface, like, really intuitive and really get used to it really quickly. And, in fact, feel much more comfortable using it than using a regular computer, and will do a lot more with it than they would with a normal computer. Probably partially because iPad does one thing at a time, and they don't feel like... Because a lot of people seem to have this fear, like, I'm going to get in here and I'm just going to mess stuff up. And they seem to not have that fear with the iPad
right.
like they do with a computer.
Right, because you're not getting into the settings and things like
right.
that. You're not inadvertently clicking on
right.
Administrative icons.
Right.
So the iPad might actually be a good bet for her, because it would allow her to do web browsing, it would allow her to do email, and obviously the crossword puzzles, there's apps to do crossword puzzles, and there's crossword puzzles online that you can do.
They're built-in accessibility options. You've got the zoom magnification for text, and it even has the voiceover screen reading stuff, so she can have things read out to her.
Right. I mean, what they're talking about, the pinch to zoom and stuff, where you take the screen and you actually use your fingers and you kind of put them on the screen and you spread your fingers out, it makes everything bigger. So if you want to zoom in on something, you can also pinch and shrink it back down and slide it around. So it's kind of a cool interface for that. So that might be an option for her.
Well, actually, her birthday is coming up, guys, so I think that's what she's getting.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you're going to get an iPad for someone else, you might as well get one for yourself. Because you're going once you see
her...
Well, once you see her using it and stuff, you're going to probably want to be able to help her out. And, you know, you're going to be grabbing it from her. Oh, here, let me show you how to do that. Oh,
I mean, you can also consider other tablet apps or other tablets, you know. There's some Android tablets, the Kindle Fire, which is based on Android. However,
that may be too small, though.
Most people, those are smaller. The screens aren't as big. And generally, the user experience so far hasn't been as good or as smooth as the iPad.
I would say the only reason to get away, if you're going to go with the tablet, the only reason to get away from the iPad would be to go with something that's larger than the iPad. I wouldn't necessarily size down.
What's larger than the iPad?
There are a few that are out there. I wouldn't say that any of them are all that great. They're especially heavy, especially maybe for an 85. Yeah, for an 85-year-old woman. Just look at the iPad. iPad's the way to go.
I think iPad's probably the best choice. If spending more money, you know, if money's a concern, then you might look at the others. But the screen's smaller on those, and the interface generally isn't considered as smooth or intuitive. The iPad's probably going to be the smoothest, cleanest choice, but it costs a little bit more.
Thank you, sir. You gentlemen have a beautiful evening, and I truly enjoy your show.
All right, thank you for your call tonight. Have a good night.
Good night.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We'll do the best we can to help you out, even though we are flying in missing geek formation. Dwight, there is Windows computers. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
I need to go ahead and get myself a Windows computer to come back here and represent.
Toshiba just released a 13-inch tablet, 2.2 pounds tablet form. You could actually beat up someone that was carrying an iPad in the picture.
Why can't you just put Windows on that machine you got there?
I could.
VirtualBox.
I've got Parallels on here. I'm allowing myself to wallow, and this thing's not very powerful anymore, and I want a new MacBook. Don't want to make this thing too functional. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next, we're going to take RC.
RC, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I have an iPad, and I have a Yahoo email account, and I access it through Safari on the iPad. And in the last week, won't allow me to open a PDF file. I click on the PDF that's in the email, and nothing will come up on the screen.
What happens? So the only method you have for delivering these are via your Yahoo account?
Yeah, my email's all in my Yahoo, and files are attached to it in a PDF. And it worked fine up until a week ago, and then the iPad won't open.
Huh.
That's what I think.
So, you're using the web-based version of Yahoo to get to your Yahoo?
Yeah, it's a Yahoo SBC account. I use it for business.
Have you tried configuring the Mail app to connect to your Yahoo?
No, because everything worked just until a week ago, and it stopped working.
Have you tried opening up a PDF that's already saved on the iPad, not one that's from your...
Even would you be able to save a PDF to your iPad?
Oh, can you not do that? I don't have an iPad.
Sure, yeah.
I should probably be quiet during this one.
No, it's all right. You're welcome to participate. I'm trying to think if I have a PDF in my Gmail, and I don't do a lot of PDF work on my iPad, but I believe I have opened one.
No. What I'm saying is, up until a week ago...
I understand that it used to work and that it doesn't work now.
Yeah.
I got that part perfect. But
solution.
Am I not getting there fast enough for you? Is that the problem?
Yeah, I got to pick a guy up at the airport. It's a business thing.
Ah, all right. Well, why don't you contact me offline, email me, and we'll deal with it that way, and we won't waste too much of your time. But I was trying to see if I could pull up a PDF file and see what the iPad did when I opened it. because I don't think I've actually opened it.
Well, I'd be curious to see if it was. So there's no local storage on the iPad.
There
surely?
Is. What I'm gonna do is there. I know you can store photos, but I don't know if you can store other attachments. So what I'm wondering is, I need to find myself a PDF file and mail it to myself in Gmail and see what happens when I do that.
We also had the guy that was at the top of the hour, first off the half of the show, that was having issues with his Yahoo Mail from Android. He said about a week ago something changed and he wasn't able to get his mail anymore.
Hmm.
I was wondering if it was an attachment thing.
Although it might be good for him just to set up his Yahoo account in his mail, in the Apple.
Especially
mail
if he's
app.
Got a business account.
I was going to say, yeah, it would be, you know, I can't speak for Yahoo's webmail, and I can't speak for Yahoo and why anybody would actually use it, but try configuring the mail app.
Well, it's still advantageous because...
Advantageous, is it?
Yeah, well, because the mail app is going to automatically download. It's going to give you a notification when new stuff comes in. You can see how many new messages
right.
you have unread. I mean, it's going to give you a better interface to more quickly ascertain what's going on with your email and to see those emails. And I mean, it's just going to be a better interface to me.
And if you're using a Yahoo account for your primary, a Yahoo account for your primary business email address, you may want to reconsider that. That's not very professional anymore.
Probably your GeoCities webpage is not working. You might want to look into that.
All right. 713-526-5738. I'm gonna email myself a PDF file that I just created. And no subject in the body, that's fine. Blink, and there it goes. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Ozargi.
Ozargi, you're on the air.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing quite well. The situation I have a MacBook Pro, and I'm using Boot Camp to run Windows on it. Initially, I had Windows Vista on it, no problem. I wanted to upgrade to Windows 7, and I was able to do that. But when I went to 7, my sound doesn't work on my Windows side. Mac side runs just fine. Just on Windows, I get no sound.
You get no sound when you're running Windows in Boot Camp off the Mac.
Correct.
Well, when you loaded the Windows... 7, did you say you upgraded from Vista to Windows 7?
I just pretty much the download is 7 on it. I took off Vista and put 7 on instead.
Okay, so you just kind of left or got rid of Vista and just did a clean install of Windows 7?
Exactly.
So no, I mean it's...
There's no sound with videos, music, or on the internet, nothing.
Since it's Boot Camp and you're booting up that way, then I would approach it the same way as if you were setting up a regular desktop and you didn't get that, and look at the maybe look at that and remove hardware and see can't you do where you you remove it and then let it detect it and install drivers.
Well, it seems to me, I mean, that's not an unreasonable thing to try, I mean, where you could go into your device manager inside of your Windows Boot Camp and do you see if it has actually detected your sound hardware?
Yeah, it shows it. It actually shows it there.
It says that downloading audio drivers has always been required for Boot Camp, so you need the one your Mac uses, likely a Cirrus sound card. According to a post back in just last day of February.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, that everyone's saying, even the drivers that they did put out for Windows 7, they don't work.
Oh.
So you've got to go download those and install those.
So
really?
If you Google search, there's an Apple support community, and I just did a Google search on No Sound Windows 7 Boot Camp.
Yes.
And the first link I came to was a discussion on the Apple forums where it talks about this very problem. It talks about, and it actually has a link to a Mac Pro, You know, depending on your hardware, it's, this one's talking about a MacBook Pro Cirrus Logic driver that you can get for Windows 7 that you'll need to install in your Windows 7 instance. Gotcha. Yeah, you'll need specific drivers to make that work.
Okay, so just Google searching it, no sound.
Well, actually, the exact term that I used was no space sound space Windows space 7 space boot camp. You know, okay. And that the first link that came up was says I installed Windows 7 using boot camp, and talks about not having any sound. But do some digging around there. But there's some drivers you're going to need to install into your Windows 7 instance, specific to your Mac hardware, to allow it to access and make sound via your sound card.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Cool. 713-526-573. But yeah, but Pete was mentioning is that sometimes when you have a device that's not working properly, you can go into the device manager and uninstall it and then reboot that operating system and let it redetect the hardware and try to install the drivers for it. It doesn't sound like it's going to work for this particular situation where you actually have to go out and get it. Now, I don't know. Windows 7 has also a thing where it will download drivers and allow you to update drivers, and that might work, but I don't know that it'll work in a boot camp situation. 713-526-5738. We've got plenty of time left in the show. We've got one call in the queue, and the subject of that call makes me want to also ask the question, did we actually have a doomsday on Monday or no?
Yeah.
Some people did.
Some people did.
I didn't hear, I didn't really see much about how many people were affected or anything.
We didn't have a doomsday. I mean, they took the servers down, everything went as planned, but a very small percentage of the population was affected. So most people had heard about it. Most ISPs took care of it, and, you know, no one really suffered any huge, large-scale outages.
All right, Groovehouse, who do we have up?
All right, up next, we're going to talk to Rebecca.
Rebecca, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm a little nervous. So.
Okay, well, it's just like you're on the phone. Don't think about the fact that millions of people are listening to you and judging you right now.
Okay.
Just sing your best, and Jay will be very gentle with his criticism.
Okay. I actually was listening to y'all on my battery-powered radio, the same one I used during Ike.
All right.
And I've been only able to get... actually, there are three computers in where I'm at right now in the house, home network. And since Monday... One of the computers, that's two of them are on a wireless network based on one that's on, you know, wired. And my brother-in-law, who's a Linux computer person, knows this stuff, even though I listen to y'all show and I laugh, even though a lot of it goes in my head. But anyways, my dad, or one of the computers, I guess, had gone to that site to check, I'm not sure, the DNC to show if you have it or not. And... I'm not sure if the other one did, and I did not. None of our computers have been able to go online since Monday. And, you know, I've just had my cell phone, and I've been trying to kind of figure out, you know, what to do. And I actually, you know, had been planning on calling you guys today and to see if, I mean, on my cell phone, there's people on like chats that say, ha ha ha, I guess if you're not watching this, if it didn't affect you, I'm like, yeah, nice. You know, like,
yeah.
So, I don't know if it's that, the whole, you know, FBI, whatever, Estonian.
Well, you said that you have three computers connected to the internet.
Yes.
All right. So in two of them are wireless.
Two of them are based, like, I guess he used a router two of them are wireless.
Okay, so you're using a router for all of these computers to get to the internet. So it would be strange to find out that all three computers were hit with virus, although it's
unless the DNS was hard-coded in the router and that's what's being handed out to the clients. The easy way to check is to go to one machine and just update the DNS to 8.8.8.8. It's the Google DNS that's easy
8.
To know.
8.8.8.8.
That's
the, why would you update the DNS?
Oh,
why
because would, if it's a DNS, just to make sure it's not a DNS changer, if that's
well,
what she
well,
suspects.
If it's a DNS changer that she has that virus, don't know that you can actually change your DNS
oh,
in
really?
The TCP/IP settings. There's something else you have to do. I don't know this for positive. But
uh-huh.
but there, the DNS changer virus goes in uh-huh. and resets it no matter what you try to do to it. So we have uh-huh. to operate under the assumption if it's a virus that we need to get rid of the virus.
Can I give you another pertinent piece of information?
Sure.
The one computer that is actually, from my understanding, that is like wired, you know, into the wall, the basis for the other to having the wireless, whenever that one internet is no internet access, like a plug gets pulled or whatever, neither the other two work unless that one works ever. So it's like that
well, my
has that to might work be internet even, sharing.
Well, my concern is that you're somehow or another using internet connection sharing rather than actually having all three of these computers use the router for sharing the internet access.
Are the other two wireless ones, are they laptops?
Yes, they're all three.
Oh.
Now,
you might want to take one of them, since it's a laptop, take it to a coffee shop or somewhere
yeah.
that has free wireless and see if it works.
If it does, it'll tell you that there's an issue with your home network
and not,
with that laptop.
With the DNS or the laptop.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Now, I was okay, because the rain had kind of stopped me from
right.
doing that, but I guess I could just...
But if you are using, if you're doing something called internet connection sharing as a way of setting up your network, and they're sharing off of an infected computer, that computer could block everybody's access to the internet.
Yeah.
So what I would recommend that you might want to do is get a computer on the internet that works somehow
mm-hmm.
and download some tools to see about scanning your system for viruses, whether that's
mm-hmm.
malware bytes, combo fix,
I have that, and Microsoft Security Essentials. You actually gave me, I emailed y'all, and y'all gave me a really good to get rid of some other virus.
All right.
But that was a while back. But I guess, are you saying, like, take the, I guess they would all three need to...
Well, what I'm saying is that
I'm
you...
Sorry.
What I'm saying is that you take and get yourself to a computer that has access to the internet and download some tools like CombiFix, Hitman Pro, Malware Bytes, something. All of these, maybe. And download them and put them onto a thumb drive or something that you can bring back and then install on each of these computers to scan them.
Okay.
But the other thing that Flick had mentioned that you should try is we want to find out if this is actually the virus. So if you take a laptop, so you're saying that if you have all the computers turned off, let's just say you have all the computers turned off
mm-hmm.
and you turn on one of the laptops,
okay.
will it work? Does it get on the internet?
None of them do now.
None of them do now. Okay, so regardless of whether one's on or off or not, so what we're thinking is what Flick had mentioned is take one of those laptops,
mm-hmm.
when it stops raining, go to Starbucks and see if
yeah.
you can get on their Wi-Fi and if it works. If it does, then the issue is not with that laptop. The issue is with
mm-hmm.
something else going on. Because you may have a problem that's completely unrelated.
You also could try... taking, assuming that all three of these laptops have Ethernet jacks, you could take the wired connection out of the one that's it's wired into right now
okay,
and plug
yeah.
it into one of the other ones and see if that one can successfully get on the internet through the wired connection instead of wireless.
Okay, because I know the one computer, not the obviously mine or the one that's jacked in the wall, one computer did go to that whatever site you see, green, red, whatever, that one was not affected. So that it's just kind of puzzling. And but I know what you I understand. So basically take and put the other two into the wired connection and see if
those machines are accessing the internet, and that way we can...
Right.
Okay.
Because based on how you're describing it, the fact that that one laptop has to be up and working for the other two to be able to access... I think they were all three were laptops.
There were two laptops, one desktop.
Three laptops.
Oh.
And the wired one is...
But one is wired in.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you.
The one is wired in.
But it sounds like the fact that that one wired in one has to be up and running for the other two to have access, it sounds like probably somebody set up that one laptop to have... to basically set itself up as a wireless access point and share its internet connection with the other two laptops based on wireless. And since that one's not working for some reason, the other two can't get on the internet either. So if you can wire one of the other ones in or try them separately, they might work.
Right, I see what you're saying. So you're thinking that the one laptop might have been... Who set this up, by the way?
My brother-in-law, he's like writes code, and he knows. I don't.
All right, that's fine. But it sounds like Flick is maybe onto something because it sounds like
he lives in another city. He lives in.
That's fine, but it sounds like they did it in a way that probably, well, maybe it gives you Wi-Fi when you don't have wireless access points. So that would be a good thing to do. So basically, you have one computer that's hardwired all the time, shares out its Wi-Fi signal, so the other two can piggyback onto that one and get onto the internet. So yeah, what Flix
allows you to do that without having to buy a wireless router or anything.
It's a secured connection.
Right,
I
understand that, but take an Ethernet connection and try. Like on one of the other one of the laptops that you're using wirelessly, disable the wireless, plug in an Ethernet cable, plug it into your router, turn the computer on and see if it gets online. And if it does, then the problem is with your computer that's kind of the center hub of all of it.
Okay.
And you need to get that one scrubbed and figured out.
Okay. I mean, I guess this is maybe getting far ahead of myself, but if that one that's the hub...
Yeah.
Is there any recourse for ever being able to connect to the internet again?
Yes, you're going to have, but like you said, you did not check it out prior to the doomsday.
It just sounded like really 1984 and kind of
well,
just
if
like
you have the DNS, if you have the virus on it, then you need to get rid of the virus.
I know.
Do you have,
now I'm like,
Do you have DSL or do you have cable?
We have Comcast.
Okay,
Comcast,
cable.
So cable.
Yeah.
Okay, so another thing you might need to do when you're moving these around, or you might want to try before you even move these around, is if you haven't done it, is to unplug the cable box.
As long as she has a router, it'll probably be fine.
But I'm not sure if they have a router. It may be plugged straight in. From the router straight into the laptop.
All right. Well, what? All right. I don't want to stay on this too long. You may need to hire someone to come and have a look. But what Flicked says is valid. If you're using Comcast, Comcast allocates the external interface to the first computer device or networking device that it sees. If that's a router, it's great. You don't have to worry about it. But if it's that computer that's got the TCP/IP connection, then that may be a problem. So to make it simple, what I would do is I would take the cable modem and I would take one laptop and I would connect it directly to the cable modem. And I would turn the modem off, turn the computer off, then turn the modem on, then turn the computer on and see if it works. But we're getting down such a rabbit hole here that we can tell you all this stuff, and unless you've been writing it down in extreme detail, you're going to hang up the phone and go, "What did they tell me to do? I don't remember." And now I've got all this stuff disconnected, and I don't know what to do. But the simple solution is to just try to get one laptop online and see if your internet's working. So try it directly connected, and we'll let you go and let you chew on that for a while, because I'm actually getting a little frustrated with trying to keep it all in mind. There's a lot of good ideas, and if you have a tech there on site, they could first of all decipher if you actually are.
If she doesn't have a router, than if she just unplugs the laptop and plugs in the other one. It's not going to work.
It's not going to work, exactly.
And it's not because the internet's not working. It's because the cable modem has the MAC address of the other laptop, and it won't let this one connect.
If I was going to do it now, you know, having somebody who, you know, brother-in-law or whatever out of town who's a Unix coder come in, set up something for you, and then run out and then not be available to support it, I would be curious if you have a router or not. If you don't have a router, get one. And then that way you get a wireless access point router so that your wireless devices can connect to the internet and so that your wired device can,
and,
you know, all
and you're not sharing one internet connection through one computer,
right,
which is a single point of failure for every
entire network.
Yeah.
Right. And if you need to,
and a bottleneck.
And I don't know, you know, what your financial situation is, but if you need to, you know, if you can justify it, you know, have a tech come out and set up a, you know, your home network. I mean, usually you could buy, if you buy a router with Wi-Fi and follow the instructions, they're not that hard to set up. You can also call Comcast and they'll give you some assistance with it. And then just have all of your computers accessing using a Wi-Fi access point router, probably be your best bet. But, you know, we're operating a lot on assumptions, thinking that your situation is that you have one computer set up to do internet connection sharing and share out its Wi-Fi as your access point, which is super clever. But if you're not the one managing that, it's not a common setup. And so when you're asking other people to come in and help you with a problem you're having with your network, they're trying to just deconstruct something a little bit more esoteric than the average home user has, which is for the average person to have multiple computers connected to the internet. They have a router that has Wi-Fi, and then they have everything just connects to that and uses the internet. If one of the computers gets tanked by a virus or something, everybody else still works. Anyway, wish you a lot of luck. And we have got about 10 minutes left in the show. Looks like we got a call coming in and one call in the queue. So, Groovehouse, give us the one in the queue.
You got it. We're going to talk to Joe.
Joe, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call.
No problem. Thank you for calling in.
And I'm not a huge listener. I'm actually just driving through Houston. I heard your show, and so I'm hoping my question's within the realm of what y'all deal with. I am I'm a small business owner, and I'm looking for a document scanner. And for some reason, the more and more research I do, they all seem to point to the Fujitsu scanner. I'm just trying to look for more options. I'm not sure.
Did we just lose you? Oh, press the button again. Are you still there, Joe?
Yes, sir.
All right. Sorry about that. Yeah. So I don't know, Fujitsu. What's pointing you at Fujitsu?
The just the online reviews that I've read, and I know they rank it very high. I'm a little bit hesitant only because of the cost, and also because I know they separate, I think, some for Mac and some for Windows.
What are you scanning, and what are you going to do with the scans?
I have a digital fax, and so I usually anything that I send out, I'm trying to be as mobile as possible, and so I'm trying to go paperless in my office. And so it's just a lot of black and white documents, not many photos, just documents really. And so I'm scanning them, saving them to Dropbox, and then retrieving them and sending them out by digital fax or email.
I mean, a basic scanner is going to do that. I mean, you don't need anything necessarily all that fancy to do what you're talking about.
I have a 4-in-1 scanner that has been getting me by so far. It's just the quality has kind of been bothering me only because once I scan it and send it out, and then I have somebody else.
When you send it via fax, the quality goes down just because of the nature of how faxing works. But is your original scan also degraded?
It is. It is.
Well, I bought one of the new HP printer scanner fax things, and you know, it was like, I think it's color, it's pretty nice, it was, you know, $250, and it does great. It just the scans look fantastic, and I don't think you need to spend a lot of money on a scanner unless you're trying to do optical character recognition. But all of these scanners,
even then, yeah,
they still do 300 dpi easy and give you good results. So, is the one that you have now, how old is it?
I would say it's about a year and a half, 2 years old. It's not very old at all.
I wonder if you're just not scanning it at a very high resolution to start with. I mean, you might want to double check your scan settings. But if you want to buy a new one, you can buy a new one. But sounds to me like you may just be missing something with the one that you have.
The one that I do have, I know I originally bought it because it's, I forget, I think it's Lexmark, I believe, because it has a very low ink cost. And okay.
How old is it?
Again, I think it's a year and a half.
Oh, yeah, it's probably a scan setting, I'm pretty sure.
If you're scanning it at 70...
Yeah, because if it's a year to 2 years old, I mean, scanner technology has... I mean, it, on some level, plateaued like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, wow.
It, I mean, there hasn't been a whole lot except to make them smaller and thinner and stuff. I mean, as far as the resolution of the scanning and the color calibration and that stuff, I mean, it's been kind of a stable technology.
If it shipped with any kind of software that came with the scanner and you didn't install that, I would say install that. And usually there are going to be a lot of different settings to where you can adjust the DPI. You can adjust how much noise you want in it. You can do quite a bit with, you know, the scanning. I've got a quick question, though. So what exactly are you scanning? Like, what documents? You're not printing things out and then scanning and faxing them, are you?
Well, some things, I do have a signature page, and so I will scan the entire stack of documents, yes, because I need that signature page. I don't, haven't gotten around to getting, I guess, a scan of my signature and scanning it and putting it into a document.
If you're signing legal documents and faxing those, that's something different. But, I mean, there may not be the need necessarily to go to an actual scanner. You know, if you've got the document in Word, or if you've got something like that, a lot of times you can just PDF it, and there
I've just convert it there in Word most of the time.
Yeah, email or email to fax services. So
okay,
check your scanner settings, though. I bet that's the issue.
I have kind of gone through that path before, and for some reason that the settings are just not user friendly, where I can set my own defaults. I have to go in there and manually set them every single time I scan something. So
well, I gotta say, I'm not a big fan of HP computers, but their scanner printers tend to be pretty top notch. So you might want to go down to the Office Depot or the Office Max or whatever and take a look at what the offerings are and, pick up one of their scanners, cause HP scanners historically have always been very good.
Great. I'll do that.
All right.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, I guess we lost that other caller. They didn't want to be on the air or something, so that's fine because we're running out of time.
We're just about done. This is it.
Well, I'm a little tired after that one call, but hopefully we got her pointed in the right direction.
KD5 on IRC represents
KD5.
Suggest a Fujitsu SnapScan.
You what?
A Fujitsu SnapScan.
SnapScan?
Yeah.
Easy way.
It'll scan straight to PDF.
Cool.
So you can.
Cool. I realize the easy way to check for the DNS changer virus is to put in an IP address of a website that will resolve. And if you can get there, you have it.
Yeah.
All too late.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to Technology Bytes, the Dwight Free Edition.
It's me.
We're going to get the heck out of here. We'll be back next Wednesday for more Technology Bites here on KPFT. If you're listening live in Houston, stick around for Vegan World Radio. If you're listening outside of Houston, check your local listings for the next great program coming up for you. And until we meet again, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Hey, Doc, guess what's coming up?
What, Phil?
The Grassroots Radio Conference. It's a national event that offers people from volunteer-powered community radio stations a chance to connect with each other. You know, that would mean a lot of people like you and me, Doc. Just all in the same room.
Wow, all volunteers.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. A chance for people to connect with each other, learn new skills, discuss issues, and party. Maybe Ernesto will let me go. What do you think?
I got the party part down.
That's the only part of it I'd probably be good at. This conference is for everyone interested in shaping the future of community radio and independent media. This event will be held July 26th through the 29th at Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center in Urbana, Illinois. Together, we will chart a vision for community radio as a dynamic community-building tool for decades to come. For more information, visit grassrootradioconference.org. This is KPFT Houston.
Way to go, Phil.
Music enjoys a rich Texas history, and since 1970, KPFT has been the home of the blues. From the forefathers and foremothers to the contemporary artists, 90.1 has always made Sunday blues a Houston staple. Our blues block kicks off Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. with the best of blues history in Chicago and beyond on the Red Eye Special. At 8, Mr. and Mrs. V bring you their signature brand of humor and music with Blues on the Muse. At 11 on Sundays, join Nuri Nuri, who delivers you everyone from B.B. King and Bobby Bluebland to Ray Charles, Rory Block, and more on the Blues Brunch. And the Blues Hound and Baby Girl close it up at 2 on Sundays, bringing the newest blues releases on Howlin' the Blues. That's our Sunday Blues Block, starting at 6 and going all day long. For another shade of blues, stay tuned for the Bluegrass Zone on Sunday at 4. You're listening to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.